It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Great big panel for you, including Kevin Marks and Kevin Purdy. We're going to talk about the latest news from the Googleverse, including the big story out of Facebook. Facebook buys Oculus VR and the crowd goes nuts. We'll find out why next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 242, recorded March 26th, 2014. That's number Wang. This Week in Google is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. Try it free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/twig. That's lynda.com/twig. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. And by Jira, an Atlassian product. Jira is the project management solution for teams planning, building, and launching great products. To learn more about Jira and to try it free for 30 days, visit atlassian.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the Googleverse, the cloud, the Facebook, the virtual reality helmets, and all of the above. Ladies and gentlemen, we brought in a massive panel for today's show. I'm going to start way on my left with Mr. Kevin Purdy, who wants everyone to know he does not normally comb his hair like that.
Hello. I'm going to a girl development party later, and the theme is nerds.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, I know.
CompleteAndroidGuide.com, ladies and gentlemen.
Or thePurdman.com.
Or thePurdman.com.
That's my name.
He's the Purd Man of Alcatraz.
Yes.
Nice to have you, Kevin. Gina Trapani's still in her mom's basement. This show is really not going well.
She's being held prisoner. Would someone please call the authorities?
This is the last show in the basement. If I have to be in my home with holes in the walls, that's what's gonna be. But next week I will be either in my home or in my office. I'm not sure, but I won't be in mom's basement.
I didn't mean to discourage this.
You want to discourage this.
I love this. I love it.
I know you guys love it.
I promise you're gonna be in your house next week. It's not like the contractor's gonna put the hammer through the wall into the next apartment or anything like that. It's gonna all be done soon.
It'll be fine.
Both Kevin and Gina are doing home remodels right now. And I also I was getting some stuff put in. What is it about contractors? They get it half done and they leave. And they don't come back.
Half-life.
And you're
and they left the drop cloths everywhere.
Like some developers I know, too.
Yeah, it's a little bit like programmers.
Oh, that ain't right.
Ouch. Burn. That's Jeff Jarvis in his beautiful library. Looks good. What's different? There's something
next
different.
Next time I want to do the show from the road. I quite like that.
That was fun. Yeah, we watched Jeff pull up via Skype.
News in action.
Well, I have this great little thing that, you know, on the dashboard, and the phone's right there, and I can just drive and talk. Yeah, I think it's fine.
Awesome. We loved it. Driving. And we got a good look, too, at your beautiful estate. Your country estate.
A snow pile.
Yeah, hard to believe. Wow. Kevin Marks and his birds are back. Hey, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
Good to see you, too.
We got a great panel today. I think we should kick things off with the big announcement yesterday. Facebook was acquiring Oculus VR, the makers of the Oculus Rift virtual reality helmet that blew everybody away. Last year, and actually this year too, for $2 billion. Not exactly sure what Facebook wants to do with a virtual reality helmet. Kind of mixed reactions, too.
Mixed? It seemed uniformly pretty pissed off.
If you go to the Kickstarter project, because as many of you may know, the Oculus Rift was a Kickstarter project. A lot of people put money in. They were asking for, I think, well, let's go see. They were asking for a few hundred thousand dollars. Ended up getting $2.4 million.
Got what they paid for, right? They got their developer kits, yeah.
We did. Well, it depends what you paid for. For instance, if you just supported it with $10 saying, I think this is a great thing. I can't afford to buy one, but I just want to put some money into this so that you continue to build a fantastic virtual reality experience for gamers. Then you might feel a little miffed. If you read the comments, there are a lot of people feel very miffed. I was a $300 level backer, so I got exactly what I paid for, an early Rift developer kit. But I think also you give people, well, for instance, let's go to Notch, the creator of Minecraft at Mojang. He was very interested in the Oculus Rift, went to visit them. Thought this is really an exciting thing for us. As soon as Facebook bought him, I'll give you his post at notch.net. Virtual reality is going to change the world. It's amazing. You strap on some gear, then you're inside whatever world you want. I got my Oculus Rift development kit, played around with it. It was convincing. He visited the office a couple of weeks ago. They wanted Minecraft. I said, it doesn't really fit the platform. It's on Java. But maybe we could do it. So he and the folks at Mojang started talking to the folks at Oculus Rift. And then he says, not 2 weeks later, Facebook buys them. Don't get me wrong. VR is not bad for social. In fact, I think social could be one of the biggest apps on VR. But I don't want to work with social. I want to work with games. And I did not chip in 10 grand to seed a first investment round to build value for a Facebook acquisition. So he's pulling out. That's an example of some of the people who are a little bit upset. I don't think anybody who has invested, however, in the real world invested in the Oculus VR is too unhappy. They're going to have a big payday.
As someone pointed out, I think if you had invested the $300 for the kit, the developer kit and the headset, and if that had been a real investment, like it eventually will be under Title III, you would now have on the order of $20,000.
Yeah. Had this been an actual investment, you'd have 20 right. grand in your pocket.
Which is, there's a great piece in the show notes by Joel Johnson this morning on Valleywag or Gizmodo. Or
that's who gave that number, yeah.
And I think it was actually more than that, Kevin. I think it was more like $220,000.
No, he said, somebody calculated it better. And
was that what it was?
Yeah, okay. Factor attended there. You would have, on the order of $200,000. It's interesting. What I found most interesting about that piece and that argument is that it's true that down the line are some regulations that will allow people to invest at that kind of level without having to be what they call an accredited investor. Right. And so
that's the Jobs Act, which is passed into law.
Jobs Act Title III, I think, currently making its way through SEC hell. Right. But when it arrives, it would prevent it from seeming like.
Oh, you got muted, Kevin. Right when you said seeming like. We'll never know what it seems like. Can you unmute there? Now he's just frozen in time.
Oh, damn.
Well, yeah, I think that Joel Johnson has the right title for this Valleywag piece. Oculus Grift, he calls it. Kickstarter is a charity for venture capitalists. Is this unreasonable? I mean, don't we all know going in that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the deal's known. You don't get equity. And I think in the end, I think it's a good piece by Joel because he says, you know, I got what I paid for. You may not like it, but this is the deal.
Sure. He also points out, though, that it would feel a lot different if it was a company that got to $2 billion through hard work, sales, iteration, and such versus a company that's just being craned out at $2 billion.
Yeah, in fact, it seems unlikely that, Mark Zuckerberg did say that they were going to continue with the game stuff. It does seem unlikely that this is now going to become a consumer product in any near time.
No, not necessarily. I mean, they've given them enough that they're in the league of the other two that they've bought that they haven't completely destroyed. You know, they've
WhatsApp and Instagram.
Yeah, they bought a lot of companies that they've shut down and folded in for engineers, right. But they've said this isn't one of those.
Well, is this an investment then by Facebook into a whole new category for Facebook?
Well, some of the commentary I saw was saying Facebook missed the boat on mobile gaming. They want to make sure they catch the next wave of gaming, and that will be this, mm-hmm. Which I'm slightly suspicious of because, you know, like Notch, I remember playing VR helmet games in the early 90s, late 80s, which was... Do you remember the pterodactyl thing?
Yeah, at SIGGRAPH, they had the pterodactyl. You put the big helmet on and you'd be flying.
No, but this was actually in arcades in London. It was in the Trocadero.
Really?
Yeah, and the CN Tower had one. This is John Walden. I actually know the guy.
As Notch points out, yeah. You had to put a big old thing on, and it was
a huge thing, and it was really low res. It was...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the other sad thing is that for people who, like me, bought in, we only got to see the low-res version 1 of Oculus Rift. We never did get to see the second one that everybody said, now they've really got it down, and we probably never will at this point. Joel Johnson suggested, and I think it's a good idea, you got $2 billion, spend a little money and send all of the early backers, the version 2 development kit. Or maybe just $10.
That would be a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
But they have VCs now who would like to recoup as much of their initial seed investment as possible at a high rate as possible. That's the nature.
Well, they already have. Yeah. I mean, that's the point. They just got their payday, right?
400.
Sure, but now they have to approve.
$400 million in cash, $1.6 billion in inflated Facebook stock. Again, yeah, Facebook is using its stock really effectively to acquire stuff.
The VCs will cash out now. The VCs are done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's still money in the table, I would guess.
You know, I get Joel's point, but it feels indicative of this weird sense of entitlement that really turns me off. I mean, it's like saying if you purchase something from a company that at some point goes IPO and makes millions of dollars, that you're owed something back. And I feel like that is very specific to our industry because we have these crazy blockbuster stories of young kids making billions of dollars. And I think that on some level, all of us are feeling like, well, I'm owed the same thing, you know, because I'm just as smart, or I could have had the same idea, or I could have written that code. And that's just not the truth. I mean, that's just not true. And when you back a Kickstarter campaign, you're not purchasing equity. And that's very, very clear. And look, I'm speaking as someone who, you know, crowdsourced, you know, the early round of my own company. This feeling of like I'm owed something. And with the Oculus deal, it was particularly bad because I didn't know much about Oculus and I'm not much of a gamer, but it felt like it really added more insult that it was Facebook because there was such a clash of cultures.
Absolutely. Had this been Google, I don't think you'd see this.
I completely agree. I completely agree. Yes. But this whole like, you know, how much are my tweets worth? You know, how much money did I make Twitter? That I just am like, how much money did you make? You chose to use the service. And, you know, the idea was never like I'm owning a part of this company now. There's a way to do that. You can purchase shares in a public company, right? But that's not what you were doing. So I find that whole angle sort of off-putting because I do feel like it's indicative of a weird sense of entitlement that's got false.
The counterpoint to that is that is the situation that happens all too often, which is the thank you for our wonderful journey letter that appears when the startup that you've been dumping your data into for the last 2 years gets bought by Facebook or Google or Twitter and shuts itself down and all your data disappears. And that's
for our incredible journey.
And now we must part. We have come to a fork in the road.
It's the incredible journey post. Yes, we are shutting down. You have this much time to get your data. This has been amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, Good luck.
There's been enough of that happening that people feel that when this happens to Oculus Rift, even though I think in this case it's fairly clear that Facebook want to keep this going and they're not going to give them $2 billion just to hire John Carmack and the other chap whose name I've forgotten who founded the thing. They really do want to build something here and they think there's something there. And, you know, yes, it's, you know, It has been a geek dream since 1980s, 1990s. We've got ages and ages of like sticking screens on your faces and hoping they work. And you know, the vision may actually be doable.
So the way to contextualize this is you gave your $10 or $300 or $10,000 and you established this company. You got them to the point where they could then go get additional venture funding and they could then go to the next prototype and then they could get acquired for $2 billion. It would be a different – I think you're right, Kevin. I think a lot of this is that people just don't trust that Facebook's going to continue on with Oculus Rift. But assuming that they do, then this is all how it's supposed to happen. Is that what you're saying? This is good.
I mean, I think this is potentially, you know, I don't think this is what this is, that feeling of they've bought this thing and it's going to die now. I think they're going to keep working on it, and potentially Facebook will take it further. But we don't know. The thing is about this VR thing has been a dream for a long time. I watched The Matrix with my son this week because he hadn't seen it. And it was interesting to sort of watch that and go, oh yeah, I remember this theory as well.
You know, to me, it goes back to Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash. That was the first time I think a lot of people, maybe Neuromancer by William Gibson, science fiction, where we
Snow Crash is a bit later. So Neuromancer, there was never any technology in it. There was just, he just said he sees this thing, and there was no explanation of how it worked.
Well, whereas he jacked in. He had a little port, didn't he?
Yeah.
In the back of his head. We don't know exactly how it worked.
No, but if Gibson deliberately didn't describe anything, so you would imagine.
Because he wasn't a technologist.
He was a technologist, whereas Stevenson was like, and there's a laser scanning your eyeball, and you know, right. he did massive.
But either way, I think we fell in love with this idea of a virtual world we could enter that would be indistinguishable from the real world, except that all of this amazing stuff could happen.
I think part of what the other pathos behind it is whether, when Kickstarter really works well, I think you've helped create a product or a project that would not have existed were it not for your support. And I think you might question, or someone might question, whether they helped create a prototype VR kit that would have never existed if it wasn't for geeky enthusiasm, or if you helped some folks get closer to Facebook. I kind of see both sides of it. I totally get that Kickstarter's not a store, but you know, you're also not a shareholder. But I think it's tough when the idea is to help individuals and small teams get started, and then you see something like a $2 billion figure show up all of a sudden.
Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, I've been around investors when they've invested in companies, and the wise investor, even if it is an investment, puts the money in and then lets the smart company run itself, and it's got to do what's best for the company from that point out. And so what were they to do? Say, no, we'll turn down this $2 billion because we want to stay in our garage.
Right.
Because we want to be loyal to our peeps who gave us a few bucks at the beginning.
Sure.
Let's all go to the garage and put on a show. You know, it's just too Shirley Temple.
Does it hurt Kickstarter in any way? I mean, the other one you might look at, and Kickstarter blazons this on their front page when you go to Kickstarter.com, is Veronica Mars, a Hollywood movie that was made with money from its fans. I think the fans don't feel let down. They got the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
something that would not have existed were it not for their enthusiasm.
And it wasn't enough money to make the movie. It just gave Sony Pictures or whoever enough input that they said, yeah, maybe we should do this.
Sure.
I mean, Kickstarter is never going to have on their front page, you know, sold to Facebook for $2 billion, right? I mean they've always been about works of art and supporting creators. And I even think they're moving away from software projects a little bit, although, you know, this really, really is hardware. But look, you know, in 5 years, if Facebook invests in Oculus, or Oculus operates on its own and it becomes the vision and becomes a mainstream consumer product, then I could see Kickstarter saying, hey, they got their start here, but not now.
The other thing about this whole thing, too, is I still don't know what Facebook does with it. I'm getting flashbacks to Second Life.
Yeah, I think it's well beyond that. But I think it is the reason I bring up Snow Crash or Neuromancer or The Matrix or whatever is because I think that many of us geeks share that dream, right, of a world we can enter. And it's a social world, isn't it? It's a social network. I think what Zuckerberg said I thought was very important yesterday, which is he sees this as a platform. I think Facebook's being very aggressively interested in what's the next thing. They almost missed mobile, which could have killed them. And I think they're that's why they're being very aggressive with Instagram and WhatsApp. They want to be, and I think they implied that they feel like VR could be the next thing, maybe after wearables or maybe as part of wearables.
Well, that was the Rafe Costa post was good on this because he was talking about the different variations on a theme here, where he basically says there's like four different. He did a quadrant diagram, which is like what you do when you're a game theorist. But he says that there's this difference between virtual worlds and augmented reality and life logging, and that you end up in different quadrants of this depending which species you're doing. And Google Glass is basically mostly useful for life logging with a little bit of augmentation. But you know, to do an actual augmented reality, you want to do have glasses that will let you overlay stuff on the world, which is some of the stuff that John Walden, who did the original virtual reality headsets, is doing now. He's building very, very good heads-up display things that have got mostly military uses, but could be useful for individuals too. There's the ski goggles that do that, but they're just giving you little Terminator displays as opposed to actually replacing bits of the world, which is one of the things that people wanted to do with this. The idea of a virtual world that you completely disappear into, it has been this thing that people have dreamt about for a long time, and that is, you know, potentially doable. Though I've always found that it gives me a headache, but that's, you know, because for the same reasons that watching 3D at the cinema gives you a headache, because your eyes are trying to focus at something that's at the wrong depth.
Yeah. Rafe quotes John Carmack, who, of course, the creator of Doom, and very famously went to Oculus VR to work on this. He tweeted today, "I have a deep respect for the technical scale that Facebook operates at. The cyberspace we want for virtual reality will be at this scale." So it's true. Facebook's got the money. Facebook's got the scale, got a billion users. If you're going to make a metaverse, I can't imagine a better company to be doing it with. Well, maybe Google.
Yeah, his reaction was a little bit defensive. He tweeted something like, "I'm coding today," which is the same thing I was doing last week at this time.
Yeah, you know? See?
Kind of like, okay.
Yeah, okay. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Still got long hair and a katana. I can do this.
I liked this Rafe Koester post. Is very interesting.
Yeah, Rafe's a good thinker on this stuff.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, one of the interesting things last week with GDC and the reaction to GDC was a lot of people being very sort of stressed about where gaming had gone and the destructive effect that all this selling rubbish all the time inside mobile gaming has had on game development and the ideas of it. And this, I think part of this sort of backlash is that this reaction was, they were thinking, great, this is finally us, like, dedicated console gamers going to get something that's even more immersive than staring in front of the TV. And it's not going to be like all that rubbish on mobile and Facebook, which has been this sort of culture war that's been going on in gaming for a while. So in a sense, this is selling to, you know, the biggest enemy of the core gamers. And I think that's part of the culture clash here.
I agree. And if you are a core gamer, then you'd probably be relieved to know that Microsoft and Sony are both working on their own virtual reality projects, although I don't know if they are the companies that are going to innovate in that space.
And I'm, you know, I'd be amazed if Google isn't doing something as well, though I suspect theirs is more augmented reality than virtual reality.
Yeah.
You know, they've already got the little tiny screen thing with glass.
I always thought that glass would be much better as an augmented reality device. It's just really a second screen that you look up.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it overlaid on life.
I'll put a link in the IRC. This is pretty cool. You can get that up. This is the company that John Walden, who did Virtuality like 25 years ago, which was the original arcade VR stuff. He's been still working in optics, and he's got this neat, like, he's just gone into the core tech of it. He's got these overlay glasses that are bright enough and high res enough to actually overlay stuff on your vision. And the point is, you know, they're building chips for it now. I'm not sure they've done the whole software stack. But there's a little interesting history of all the different variants of this that they've had.
And, of course, our friend Jerry Ellsworth, she came up here and she had a Kickstarter project called Cast AR, which is, again, for gaming more, but it was kind of wild. You wear glasses that project a gaming space onto a screen in front of you so that you can interact with it. I think this is something that is very often the case with science fiction that inspires development. They want something that they read about. And I think this is where, you know, Rafe talks about the metaverse. I think this is where what geeks want. So a lot of people are working on it in a lot of directions. It's just that it's Facebook. Nobody, I don't, you know, do you want Mark Zuckerberg?
Let me ask this. If it hadn't been for the Kickstarter, let's say they hadn't gotten a dime from Kickstarter, never did that.
Right.
Would there be the same resentment?
No. Of course not.
So it's not Facebook.
Nobody
itself.
Resents WhatsApp's getting $16 billion. I mean, we're all kind of flabbergasted, but nobody resents it. So yeah, and I think I think it wouldn't have been had it been Google or Apple. I don't think it would have been this kind of reaction. Maybe Apple. I don't know. Go ahead, Kevin.
The metaverse was a mall as well. I mean, the metaverse was a very commercialized vision.
Right.
And that's, you know, that it was the assumption that it would eat the web, and which was, you know, a lot of this was pre-web. When was Snow Crash? Was that 90? Come out?
It's a long time ago.
92.
That was required reading at the first .com I ever worked at. It was like part of orientation.
See what I'm saying? That's exactly it. That's, people wanted to live that. 1992, yeah.
92. So yeah.
92
so
that feels like a long time ago.
Well, there's.
Yep.
I've linked this thing before. Douglas Adams' Hyperland. I could be my link of the week, if you like. If you haven't seen this, it was a documentary Douglas Adams did in 1989 with friends of mine at the BBC, which was talking about what it means to interact. It's actually starting at the beginning isn't a good idea because it takes a long time to get going. It starts with Douglas Adams being asleep, but. He talks about the idea of interactivity, and the examples are based on HyperCard and video discs and little bits of VR, and they've got these lovely, lovely floating icons and things. There's an idea of how you interact with it. And he's wonderfully, the avatar talking to him is Tom Baker camping
out. Doctor Who!
Doctor Who.
It all comes back to Doctor Who, doesn't it?
If you haven't seen this, see this. But like, so you watch this, and he predicts. He has this little person who pops up. He asks questions of, and they just finds things, and everything's linked to everything else. There he is, sticking his face in. And then at the end, they start going into VR, and there's a great bit. I'll see if I can.
I found the VR helmet. They're showing a NASA.
Yeah, it's just on this bit. So this is the NASA guy who puts the VR helmet on. And then...
Look at the size of that thing.
Oh, my God.
This thing is huge. This isn't just down the street. This is NASA Ames. And
it's not even good.
He's built a model of the room he's sitting in, which is like a gray cubicle. And he walks around in gray
cubes.
Most of us do not want models of the rooms we're in.
Yeah, but understand that this is the base technology. They just got better and better and better. That's all.
But I'm telling you, this was 89. We had this. 1991 was when Virtuality built the arcade things with the pterodactyls
those. So these both predate Snow Crash.
And then Snow Crash was being written about that time. Right. I mean, it took him a while to write it. So it was published in 92, which means he was running it around 1990 as well.
Right.
But that was thought through about what you would actually do with this, and then the web came through and sideswiped everyone, and this piece has been sort of sitting on the side for a bit. So it's nice to see it coming back again.
Yeah.
But it was very much a sort of and I suppose the other fork of this is Second Life, which was the other assumption of the metaverse and the virtual world. But that was all done on the screen.
Right.
And it's still ticking over and it's there, but there was a huge excitement around it as a space for commerce. But people did exactly like the NASA guy. They built models of their shops in it, which is like, no, I don't want a model of your shop.
I would nominate Second Life as the single most overhyped thing on the net.
Yeah. But like all of these, they're early stage and things will evolve. The early net was pretty, the early web was pretty awful too.
Yeah.
I think that this is aiming towards something very exciting. And if $2 billion investment from Facebook moves it along, I guess I'm all for it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, changelog time. Gina Trapani will have the latest from Google. There is a lot to talk about, so we're going to dig right into it. But first, a word from our friends at lynda.com. Lynda.com, the best online learning company ever. Can help anyone learn, not just, I think a lot of people think, oh, that's where I go to learn Final Cut or Photoshop, but not just software. You can learn creativity. You can learn business skills. Lynda.com, you can even learn operating systems. If you're trying to get used to Windows 8.1 or OS 10 Mavericks, they've got it. Over 2,000 courses, many, many more courses daily. The thing about Lynda.com is the instructors are all the top in the business. They're great teachers, but more importantly, they're actually doing these things. Many of them are good friends. Our Photoshop buddy, Burt Monroy, has a wonderful regular show on lynda.com. So soft skills as well as hardcore skills. The content is curated chapter by chapter. Each lynda.com course is carefully constructed so you can learn from start to finish. And if you wish, you can jump right in because they've got, for every course, a complete text transcription. So you could say, well, I'm learning the GIMP, but I just want to know, how do I make a 3D model? And you could jump right into the part you want. Courses for all experience levels, too. Beginners, intermediate, and, yes, advanced. You can watch from your computer, your tablet, your mobile device. When you pause on one, you could pick it up right where you left off on another. And lynda.com now has certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. At lynda.com, since you're a Google fan, you might want to know that you'll also learn the latest in Google software and services, how to make the most of Google's cloud apps for business, productivity, and fun. You'll also can explore developing for the Google Cloud Platform, learn all you need to know about building Android apps with their SDK and developer tools. I mean, this is all in here. Try it free right now. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire course library, $37.50 a month for the premium plan. But you can try it free right now for 7 days, full access to the entire site, over 2,000 courses for free when you visit lynda.com/twig, lynda.com/twig. This week in Google, we thank Lynda so much for the work she's done and her support of this week.
And let me add, Leo, that at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, where I teach, we buy a site license for lynda.com for all of our students. And that's how they learn an immense number of the tools that they do and how they can dig into more tools on their own. And it's an invaluable resource.
We do kind of the same for our editors and stuff. When they need to learn Final Cut or the new version, we always go out and get them on lynda.com. That's a great place to learn. Let us bang the drum slowly. It's time for the Google Changelog.
The Google Changelog.
Gina Trapani is in her basement with the latest Google stuff.
Man, I just love that intro. Thank you, Leo. Google Now. Google Now has arrived in the stable build of Chrome for Windows and Mac. We saw this in the beta versions a couple weeks ago. We've been talking about Google Now on the desktop. Well, it's rolling out to everyone now. The cards will only be visible on your computer if you use Google Now on your mobile device and if you're signed into Chrome. And the cards that you see on your desktop Chrome are a subset of the mobile cards. So you'll see weather, sports scores, commuter traffic, and event reminders. I'm seeing some stock prices in mine. Some cards may be based on the location of your mobile device, which hopefully is near the computer you're using, but others will just work independent of location.
How do I see those cards? Where do they show up?
So if you've got Chrome installed, I'm on a Mac here. I see a little bell at the top of in my menu bar.
Notifications. Yeah.
You seeing Now cards there?
Well, I see the notifications from Google Plus.
Well, no. Up in your Macs, actually, in your Macs.
Oh, in the Mac menu bar, there's another little. Oh, look! It's Greg Burnett's birthday. Happy birthday, Greg.
Go.
Yeah, you're right. Twitter stock falls 7%.
There's always the weather. The weather's
and there's always
there.
The weather. That's
no
nice.
No love for Linux, though.
No love for Linux.
Oddly, I don't think I have this on my Chromebook.
And no love for Chrome OS.
If you switch to a non-stable channel, Jeff, it's there. But
it's there in the beta? Okay.
Yeah.
I always run my Chromebook in the beta channel. That seems safe enough. Yeah?
What could
not Canary. What could possibly go wrong?
I didn't see the Now ones in mine, but maybe I hasn't run the update.
It's rolling out slowly.
Awesome.
Google Play Music got a bunch of new features to the web app, that is. Drag and drop uploads, a mini player, and offline downloads. So you don't have to use that desktop a client called the Music Manager in order to upload your music to Google Play Music. You can just drag and drop your music in the browser. You actually have to opt into this. It's a music lab. So you have to opt into the lab feature. And then you can even configure your Google Play Music in the browser to add music automatically in the top right, which is kind of nice. You can also download your music now from the web app. And the little player has a little new pop-out functionality that you can click the arrow on the bottom right of the corner of the UI and pop out the player. So some nice upgrades there. a new Chrome experiment called Chromecast Photo Wall. You can see it at g.co/photowall. So this is how it works. You got a Chromecast plugged in, and then you and your friends all have your Android devices, and you got this Android app, and then you can create a photo wall, and everybody can start adding photos to that wall.
Neat.
Yeah, and it shows up on your TV, and it generates a YouTube video automatically when you're done. And I think this also works just with your laptop as well if you don't have a Chromecast.
We did it at Cowork Buffalo the other day. It got a little anarchic, so we had to shut it down, but it's pretty awesome.
Is it pretty awesome? So the Android app doesn't have the best reviews in the Play Store. We were talking about this last night on All About Android, but it looks really neat, and it does seem like more of an experiment than the most stable app in the world. But Kevin, I haven't tried it, so I'm glad to hear that you had it going at Cowork Buffalo and it worked.
The setup is a little wonky, you know, especially when you have to type in a code on your Android and make sure you've got the right Chromecast and all that stuff. But when it's working, it's pretty neat. You're all literally just kind of pinboarding it in front of each other.
What happened that you had to stop? People put up pictures, naked pictures of themselves?
It's a co-working space.
Okay.
A lot of sensitivities and sensibilities at play. So someone's got to step in and be the police.
Yeah. Okay, just checking.
Oh, so there's no one who's okaying photos. They just go, whatever gets dragged on.
Apparently
there.
Not.
I think you can make it private, but then why are you hosting your own private photo wall? Just show people, you know, like if you want to show people your vacation slides and force them to watch, I guess. I don't know.
You must watch this.
No, it's really fun when it's working. It's very experimental, but totally fun.
It sounds a lot like Google Plus events where everybody could contribute their photos to, you know, at a particular event, like if you're having a picnic or something. I don't even know if this is still around. I think it is, but it seems similar it's a social photo sharing.
Yeah,
still
there, yeah.
One quarter of your event attendees don't email you and say that they never got the invite. So it's like that.
All right. Well, on that note, Google Drive adds image editing features in slides and drawings. And this will just allow you to do basic editing tasks without having to leave the app. That means you can crop, apply shape masks, and more from inside a presentation or drawing. And you can also add borders. So little extras there for docs, for slides and drawings users and docs. And finally, I know you've been waiting for this forever. I know this is what you wanted in Gmail forever. Pinterest for your inbox. It has been called. The Gmail promotions tab is getting a little visual makeover. This is a test of a new design that switches from being a list-based view to a grid with big images, which of course Google is now caching on their servers, right? So they've got all those images. And so it shows images from the emails that'll make it easier to see exactly what the message is promoting. And the grid view makes it easier to scroll through a lot of messages with infinite scrolling. And you can sign up to try this test. It's a field trial. So you have to opt into it. And you'll be able to toggle between the traditional list view and the grid view within the promotions tab. And this test is just for desktop only right now. So almost never look at my promotions tab. But hey, if you're into coupons and promotions, this sounds cool.
Where do we sign up? How do we do that?
Yeah.
In the labs? I don't see it in the labs on my Gmail. So I have to.
There is a long link that Marketing Land had. Sorry. Oh,
well, if you go to the Google Mail blog, you can get that link, I guess.
Yeah. Pretty,
okay. All right.
The test.
All right.
Sorry.
A more visual way to view your spam. Thank you, Google. g.co/mailfieldtrial is the shortened URL.
Oh, perfect.
I'm sorry, Gmail. g.co/gmailfieldtrial.
Gmail field trial.
Yeah. And then you have to click join field trial. And then if you're accepted, yes, I want to join the field trial. If you're accepted, they'll let you do it. If you're selected, you'll see a message in your promotions tab when this feature is turned on. g.co/gmailfieldtrial.
I opted in and I do not have it yet.
Let me check my Gmail, because I might be better than you.
You might be.
I'm trying with my...
Not yet.
I've actually got backup Gmail account. This is basically all spam, so that should be a good one to try.
Yeah, well, that's why it's perfect for that, yeah. All the stuff in promotions is spam, isn't it? Isn't that what it means?
It's
spam you signed up for.
spam you signed up for.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Google would call it spam.
Yeah.
Let's see. I have multiple Google accounts going on here. So, but that's all I got.
And that, my friends, is what we call the Google changelog. Bum 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 bum. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take a break and come back with more. Kevin Purdy is here. We're going to make Kevin say something. Maybe you could do a song from Greece.
One or two.
Or High School Musical, actually.
I don't want to age myself, but I would be more familiar with Greece.
Yeah, okay. Kevin Marks is also here, and listen for the bird song. Say the secret word and win an aged
looks like
starling.
He just ate one.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? The cat that ate the canary. Jeff Jarvis from his beautiful library in upstate New York. I don't know where it is.
Or but somewhere.
It looks like part of it the ought to be.
Jersey,
upstate New Jersey. Downstate, east side. And, of course, from Brooklyn, Gina Trapani. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. The secret behind some of the most beautiful websites in the world. That's why Squarespace says a better web starts with your website. The hosting, of course, we never see a Squarespace site go down. And I know, I'm an expert on bringing sites down. Never a Squarespace site. So it's great hosting, but it's also great software running on top of it. That means it's always secure, always up to date, and always being improved. New features, new designs, better support. 25 beautiful templates to start with. You want to see them? Click the Get Started button at squarespace.com. You actually can use this free for 2 weeks. And features like the Logo Creator Tool, which lets you design a logo for yourself. If you get a little confused at any point, you can easily talk to support. They're there 24/7 via email, chat, phone, plus a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. Every Squarespace site has a couple of features. All the templates include mobile responsive design. That means they'll look great at any size, anything from an iPhone to a 30-inch display to Times Square, baby. But also, they all have commerce. Even the least expensive $8 a month plan has e-commerce. This means it's great for a nonprofit, a cash wedding registry, a school fund drive. Pricing really is right. You've got for $8 a month when you pay for the annual plan, you'll get a free custom domain name. The e-commerce professional plan includes unlimited bandwidth and storage. Add a full e-commerce solution for $24 a month, including carrier shipping calculators, label printing, integrated accounting. You've got the developer platform, so if you are a CSS or JavaScript wizard, you've got it all. They've got mobile apps, too. Really nice mobile apps that let you post and manage your metrics. I tell you, Squarespace has got it all going on. Squarespace.com. Try it free for 2 weeks. No credit card required. When you decide to buy, please use our offer code TWIG, and you'll get 10% off your new site at Squarespace.com. A better web starts with your website at Squarespace. You're watching This Week in Google, and we are talking about the Goog and the cloud. There's a lot of news about Google, not just Google, but Google and Apple. Google, Apple, Intuit, Clear Channel, Comcast, eBay, Microsoft, Adobe. Apparently, they've been colluding, violating antitrust law by agreeing not to poach each other's employees. And the really nasty part, which we've seen this before, this antitrust case has been going on for some years, is the email from Steve Jobs to Eric Schmidt, then CEO of Google, saying, "Oh, you got it. What is that?
You're
in the class.
I'm in the class. I was working for Google at the time. So.
Oh my God!
Wow!
Of course you are. So tell us, Kevin Marks, why this was a bad thing for you as an employee."
It was not particularly a bad thing for me because Google paid me fairly well. But
but had you been looking for another job at Apple or maybe...
Yeah, no, the thing is that if you actually read the transcripts and what they were saying, it is fairly damning. That's the piece that's shocking.
Oh, the smoking gun is horrible.
And they're well aware of what they were doing. There's Eric Schmidt saying, let's do this verbally so we don't leave a paper trail, But they're basically saying... We're all friends here. We shouldn't recruit from each other's companies. This is a, which is the effect of reforming a cartel. And it's interesting reading Horowitz's book, which is the great book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, on being a CEO. The one piece in that that made me go, wait a second, was a chapter where he talks about not poaching people from your friends. And reading that in the light of this sort of made me think about how far the attitude is. And from their point of view, it's we don't want to annoy these other companies to get into a bidding war because that will raise the price of engineers. And as an engineer, that's like, yeah, please raise my price.
Raise my price, yeah.
please fight over me. And that's effectively what happens when they do these acqui-hires. They end up getting into bidding wars for a company to get the engineers. And those are the ones who you know, benefit. And I suspect that this is the unexpected consequence that they've done by deciding not to bid against each other and hiring and not to poach each other's engineers. They're creating incentive for people to leave and build startups instead and then get hired that way. So I think they've probably shot themselves in the foot with this. You know, I'm fairly sure that this is a lawsuit. Some lawyers will make a lot of money out of it. There'll be a settlement and it'll be like the Amazon.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, it's the Department of Justice suing here. This is the U.S. government. This is antitrust law. There is a class action suit as well, but this is a classic violation of antitrust law. Everybody knows this rule. And, you know, Steve Jobs apparently furious here's the email from Sergey Brin. So I got another irate call from Jobs today. I don't think we should let that determine our hiring strategy, but I thought I'd let you know. Basically, he said, if you hire a single one of these people, this means war. In any case, let's not make any new offers or contact new people at Apple until we've had a chance to discuss. Eric Schmidt agrees. He says, I got a same call from Meg Whitman over at eBay. Let's do this orally. This is the one that's really reprehensible is Eric Schmidt writing to Steve Jobs saying, hey, don't worry, we fired that person that offered an Apple employee a job. There, we're out of here within 1 hour. We're going to make a public example of them. And Jobs sending back a little smiley face. And then Larry Page says, gosh, I never got a smiley face from Steve.
one thing that amazes me about a paper trail like this is that companies, publicly traded companies that you assume have these huge structures and delegation and so many committees and shareholders meetings, but the way this article reads, it's like Steve calls Larry. Larry tells Eric, hey, Eric, got some friction over here from Steve. And Steve's like, yeah, I heard from Meg too. Like it's a clubhouse.
Oh, it's very much. Very much so.
Like it's not multi-billion-dollar companies with hundreds of thousands of employees and all these assigned
like
roles.
Four bakers just like playing about the flour shipments. Yeah.
Here's the email from Steve Jobs. Eric, I'd be very pleased if your recruiting department would stop doing this. Thanks, Steve. The next day, Schmidt sends an email to Google's top HR people. I believe we have a policy of no recruiting from Apple. This is a direct inbound request. Can you get this stopped and let me know why this is happening? I need to send a response back to Apple quickly. Let me know as soon as you can. Then they respond, the person who contacted the Apple employee will be terminated within the hour. We're going through her records to make sure she didn't contact anyone else. Please extend my apologies to Steve Jobs. This was an isolated incident. And then Steve sends back the smiley face.
Wonder if anybody's yet surfaced that fired HR person.
Boy, you know, that would be that'd be interesting.
Doesn't somebody in HR say, that sounds weird. Why are we doing this? I mean, is it?
No, because that's not what HR is like. You know, HR is there to be the tool of the company.
Well, and they know it's illegal. They know it's illegal. It is a clear violation of antitrust law. There's no like, oh, we didn't know that. Oh, you can't do that? Oh, I didn't know that. They knew that.
So I think part of this is, and that was the interesting thing about Horowitz's book, was that when you're a company of like 20 people, not poaching your friend's startup's employees makes a bit of sense.
Right.
You don't actually want to do that. And the problem is people, as these companies grow, they forget that they're now behemoths. And you know, Microsoft was a classic for this. They would always think they were a startup, even at the point where they were half of them with conspiring to knock other companies over. Apple and Google and Facebook are like major employees around here. They employ thousands and thousands of people. So at some point, what seems like a reasonable, like, okay, let's not get into a war over this, let's do this amicably, becomes this power structure. But the companies still think of themselves as small and scrappy. And that's the piece that's tricky. Yeah. And because, you know, when these companies grow like this, it does creep up on you. And the challenge is to put structure in place in time. I mean, we had a similar thing with the GitHub fiasco last week, where they've grown to be this huge company without building a management structure and still behaving like a bunch of kids hanging out. And now it's blown up in their face because they were, you know, ridiculously unprofessional.
Mike Arrington's at it again. I just love this.
Oh, we're going to do this Arrington story, aren't we? Let's do it.
So it goes back to the story we've been talking about for a couple of days now. Microsoft had an employee who was leaking code to a French blogger. He was very loyal to the company, doing it on Hotmail, Microsoft's MSN Messenger, and SkyDrive. So Microsoft said, well, you know, when they, let's just look at that. Let's take a look at that Hotmail thread and read his stuff. And since Microsoft has said, no, we're going to, you know, obviously you don't need a subpoena to read your own email server. We don't do that, though, unless there's a clear, you know, violation of the law. But from now on, we're going to have it live up to the standard that we would have to if we were trying to read Google's mail, the standard of subpoena. We're going to hire a counsel who is a former judge who will review all requests before it happens. Not that it happens very often. So Mike Arrington's reading about that, and he says, you know, I have firsthand knowledge of this. A few years ago, I'm nearly certain Google accessed my Gmail account after I broke.
I love that phrase.
I'm almost positive. Mike, by the way, this is kind of how he, this is his MO. He's kind of a little, I don't know, paranoid. Nearly certain that Google accessed my Gmail account after I broke a major story about Google. A couple of weeks after the source was approached me in a very inebriated state and said that he or she had been asked by Google if they were the source. They denied it, but they was then shown the email that proved they were the source, and a little while later was unemployed. Google says, no, we don't do that. Nah, it never happened. Google general counsel told Liz Gaines at Recode, Mike makes a serious allegation here. Google opened email messages in his Gmail account to investigate a leak. While our terms of service might legally permit such access, and that's kind of the point to underscore, all email services have weasel words in there that allow them to do this. We've never done it, and it's hard for me to imagine circumstances where we would investigate a leak in that way.
There's two things about that.
Yeah.
One is, the obvious follow-up question is, how would you change your terms of service to make that not possible in future? You're the chief counsel. Please do that. Because you should not have terms that let you do that. But the other piece of it is, we did not investigate it in this way. What will have happened is they will have had some kind of, you know, security team to go and look at this, and that may have been an outsourced team that went and did something more fishy. You know, that they may have gone and looked at the employee's mail and investigated them and seen what other ones they'd use. You know?
Yeah.
So
Occam's razor would tell you it's almost far more likely that they looked at the email on the employee's computer that went through their own Gmail server.
Okay, but Arrington said the email that he saw at the party was sent from a non-Google account to Arrington's Gmail account.
Well, yeah, sure, but what computer did he send?
If you hire a private investigator, what do you think they're going to do?
They're going to read the emails.
they're going to go and try and hack the employee's emails.
Right.
And they're going to do it.
They don't really have to hack it. They could just look at it.
I mean, yeah, it could have been
because he was using some non-Google service. You know, he wasn't completely stupid, but clearly, he was like clumsy and drunk, according to Mike.
Drunk later.
The drunk thing is like, why does that need to be? Couldn't you have just said the employee came up to him at a party?
Because it's Mike Arrington. He's making it colorful.
It's Mike Arrington, and he has to be a dick about it.
Well, there's my
Kevin answer. And I know have some experience in this man. This role.
Oh yes.
We don't want to bring that up, but no, I get on with Mike, and he's a good journalist. He does interesting things. But he will grandstand a little bit about this. You know, like when he got all the Twitter internal emails. You know.
Yeah.
He's not in a great position to grandstand about this, given that he got leaked Twitter's internal emails
and spent a
big chunk of time trolling.
That's a good point. We should just say, you know, your email is never and has never been private. And if you want to send private email, there's encryption and use it, because that's really the fact.
But what Google should say is, we shouldn't, if we don't want to do this and we're not going to do this, then we should change our terms of service. That's the pressure to put back on them. And it shouldn't be us saying change your terms of service to be like this. It would be, okay, General Counsel, you said that you don't do this, therefore change your terms of service so you can't, and explain to us why you can't do that.
As John Gruber said, it is interesting that they chose to respond at all to this particular, you know, allegation of email reading, whereas there are 6,000 others that exist on the web in some form. But they
got to respond to Arrington's.
We didn't do this to Mike Arrington's claim.
Well, and also Karush, which, you know, it was re-reported and spread out, so they wanted to get it under control.
Let me look at the smoking gun on the Google terms of service. Let's see if we can find that. Apparently Yahoo, Microsoft, Google, all do this. I mean, have these terms in their terms of service. Let's see. Yep. Oh, well, I can't quite find it, but you know, it says under certain circumstances. Generally, it says something like under certain circumstances.
And that may well have been put in because they get subpoenas. And,
right.
You know, the very common one is someone's going through a divorce and they subpoena the spouse's emails. And that goes on all the time.
Right. Yeah, for a subpoena, I understand. I think the issue is...
No, I mean, the Microsoft thing was that they didn't require the investigator to get a subpoena. They reported this thing to the investigators and they said, oh, we're just going to look at his journalist thing. So they didn't get the clear separation of powers thing going there.
Right.
Google has been good about that in the past. They are fairly good about that, making sure, you know, come back with a court order type stuff. And I don't think that they would have, I'd be surprised if they did that internally.
Microsoft's response, I thought, was fairly good, but neither did they change their terms of service. They still allow it, but they are going to have a high standard, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so that's the problem. It's like, trust us, we're going to do this internally. And it's the same people who are doing this other... phoning each other up and firing people and conspiring in that way. It does make you a little suspicious, yes.
The M8 from... I bet you guys talked about this a little bit on All About Android last night, the new HTC One.
We did.
You are an HTC One owner.
I am.
One was a really bad name, isn't it? So this is the two.
Mate, yeah.
They are offering it on the Google Play Store, which... Yeah, the M8 because... Oh, mate. Oh, I didn't even get that.
Oh, I didn't either.
It was the M7. It was last year's. You own an M7.
I think mate was just...
So you can get it from the four big carriers, and there's a Google Play Edition. Which
is
great news.
It's in my cart at the moment.
Oh, really?
I haven't not
pushed the button.
Out.
So what's special about it? Why is it nicer than a Nexus 5?
Oh, God, I could go on and on.
Ooh.
Dude. Just give me the
phone. Sell me on it, man. Sell me.
My son needs a new phone.
There's a Gizmodo post that is side by side. It's a GIF that has the photos from the Nexus 5 and the new HTC One, like GIFing in and out and in and out. And it's all you need to know.
Camera, there's a little debate on the camera. It's very similar to the camera you have, Gina, the old HTC One camera, still 4 megapixels, although the front camera is 5 megapixels. But they're doing this super pixel thing. They are putting two pickups on the back so that they can you can have selective focus on your images, which is odd, again.
You can change your focus after the fact.
Yeah. The second sensor is actually a depth sensor. So something's going on there. I'm not sure what.
You could also just take out the things in the foreground can be treated one way and the rest of the photo can be treated another way because it understands depth.
Yeah. But it's still a 4-megapixel camera, and a lot of the issues, I think, that I had with the M7 are still there. It's good in low light, except it overexposes. There's still some issues with it. I'm not sure that it's a great camera. Do you really like your camera and your M7?
The camera's okay. It's
that ultra pixel thing. I'm not sure I buy
photos,
it.
That definitely doesn't focus the way I'd like. You know, it's okay. My daughter likes to throw my phone a lot, and I just bricked it today. Like it's dead. Like I can't quite boot it up. That's why the M8 is in my car.
I think you have a pretty good excuse.
It seems like a good excuse to me. The big thing with my problem with the M7 is the battery life. And the Verge and everyone is saying that the battery life on the M8 is way better. So that's...
It's a bigger battery, and it's also using the new Qualcomm quick charging capability. Mm-hmm. It comes with Quick Charge 1, which is not great, but the new Quick Charge 2, which apparently is just a software update, means it can charge like twice as fast.
Mm. Yeah, that's really nice. And I'm not big on cases, but I love that dot view case.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that gives you a dot, you know, a small, like kind of like the Moto X, where you have a version of the screen that doesn't use up a lot of power, so you can see what's going on.
Gina, like light bright.
It's like a light bright. It is.
We've got to torture you more than this. So, because when you bought that one, the Nexus 5 wasn't out, the Moto X wasn't out, as I remember. Mm-hmm. So now that you have a panoply of choices.
Yes.
Okay. So the Moto boom X. Sound. You got the two speakers on the front. That's a big difference.
I love the speakers on the front.
Sound is really much better on the HTC One. Both the 8 and the 7. Yeah.
It costs twice what the Nexus 5 does.
It's $700
instead of $350.
You can put an SD card in it, which you can't do in the Nexus 5.
Which is also nice.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I
think the screen's
the
better.
5,
I so. Like the screen better. It's 441 dots per inch. It's a very high res screen.
Well, it's the same as this. Great. I mean, they're both
1080p. Yeah. I guess it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're both 5-inch screens. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I shared with you guys, I bought the HTC One because of the design. I was completely just suckered in. I just think it's a beautiful
phone. Well, you'll like the M8. I played with it yesterday. It's very nice. It's even nicer.
That metal on the back looks
amazing.
Yeah,
it's even. I think it's even nicer, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. A little softer than the not as sort of rectangular. It has a little bit more rounded edges.
More roundy. But, feels good really in the nice. Hand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think if you're getting the Google Play Edition, I think you're spending $350 for better hardware design. Because otherwise, it's the same software, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the Google Play Edition is just...
It's the same as the Nexus 5.
Android, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same as
Plain
Nexus 5.
Plain Android.
Exactly.
I actually got a Verizon Edition because I like the HTC Sense. I want to see the new Sense.
You like Zoe's, right?
I love Zoe's. Yeah.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Zoe.
Apparently, they've improved the Zoes as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's sad is this is these. I think these really are great phones. They're comparable to an iPhone, they're really among the. But because they don't have the marketing budget that Samsung does, they just don't. They get no traction.
HTC itself is not doing so well. Every time I see a news story about them, right, financially and market share wise,
they're struggling. Yeah.
Despite putting out phone after a few phones now where every site almost is in agreement about how good they are and how well designed.
Yeah. So a 32 gig Nexus 5 is $399. 32 gig HTC One M8 is $699.
So it's $300.
$300 more.
Would you push Gina to a Moto X, Leo?
No, she likes her metal.
She's beyond that. Eh?
You love the Moto X though, Leo.
I do, but I have a feeling I may be trading it in for the... M8 when it comes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, it's, you know, see, I got the M8 with all that, you know, Sense stuff on it. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know that I'd buy a 5 right now. I feel like, I'd wait till after Google I.O.
Oh, yeah. You might get one in the mail under your seat.
There might be might be something new soon, right?
Yeah.
But that's always the case.
Well, there will be a new Moto X this summer.
Mm.
Mm.
Boy, I've used the voice stuff on my, and I don't have the as good a voice as you have, but on my Nexus 5, I was using it today to get Chad to tell you I was late coming and just dictating emails. Works pretty amazingly.
Yeah. The voice on Android is great, period. We all love it. Somebody's getting a Skype call, which is bizarre because you're all on Skype.
Bizarre. No, I know.
Google I.O. is open for business. Well, it will be soon. Registration opens April 8th. It's going to be random once again.
Random.
April 8th through April 10th. I don't know why they have the extra 2.5 days.
It says it in 8 seconds.
So you can play the stupid game before you sign in.
Is that what you have to do now? You have to play
a game?
It's not really
a game. I mean, I went through it while we were on at the beginning, and you just kind of click it a bunch of times, and it goes around and around and around.
It goes, what goes around must come around. See. Do I have to do this to win a...
No, it just kind of then goes through.
Gather these elusive subatomic particles.
So just click on the big thing, and it...
Oh, I'm gathering them. Because again. Google is gathering every bit of atom in the universe to become part of the new Google Universe 2.0. Larry Page's Island. Now what?
Well, now it'll come up with another one.
Ooh.
And
you gotta think, who spends all this time in the Googleplex writing this crap?
Well, click. You're making a
tetrahedron. Polyhedron monolithin.
Click on the right thing at the bottom right.
This is what my pants are made of.
Click on the pink thing in the bottom right. It'll open the box. Tell you what's happening.
Silicon. Build up the atoms to create a full crystalline structure of this highly abundant element. Click the blue balls to make more. This is beautiful. I don't know. Is this... Jeez, imagine how good this would be in an Oculus Rift. Now what? I have in their neural network. Add raw data to see what this network's processors can come up with. Okay. Sucking in the raw data. It came up with a Rubik's Cube. Now a donut. What is this? This is so stupid.
It's weird in the post-NSA world that Google has a bunch of games where you have to gather everything into your central
your sphere.
Keep it all safe.
Now what? Tap the Earth to see how we connect with one another. To share ideas instantly. With balloons, Project Loon.
What's the point?
Oh, modems. And now satellite technology. Soon we will travel to Mars and this strange jigsaw puzzle planet. What the hell?
Or possibly a Death Star.
Oh, the Death Star. This is like, I feel like... Oh, my God.
There, and now it just starts over again.
What?
After all that, you're back to the...
Oh, well, I should have just scrolled down. That was the test. That was the test. Scroll down. Oh, hey. Wow. Jeez. Let's break stuff. Experience I.O.
Is that a Facebook shout-out?
Getting to I... Was it? They are round.
Oh, break stuff. Move fast and break stuff.
Is that what Facebook says?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, move fast.
Let's reboot. Let's hack. Let's grab a drink.
If it's broken, break it is the Google equivalent.
Right. If it's broken, break it more?
Well, the point is, if you find something broken, demonstrate that it's broken so people fix it.
Oh, this is good. So there's no rush this year. Just apply to attend any time during the two-day window, and we'll randomly select who gets to come.
Mm.
You. No. You. Yes.
It's pretty good opportunity for them to capture a lot of data about people who are interested in going to I.O.
Yeah.
It's also $900 for general admission.
They don't mention that. There's no price tag at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to wait, and here's a binary clock counting down.
It's on the help page, and there's actually a press pass request form on the help page as well.
Oh, okay. Well, there is.
I guess I should fill that
out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to use Google Wallet. You need to use Google Plus in order to apply. And its academic admission is $300. I mean, this is way better than rushing to try to register, you know, at a moment in time.
Yes.
But you are competing for the ability to have the privilege to pay $900 to go.
Lots more stories. I'm going to let each of you nominate a story from our long list. That you'd like to talk about. We're going to get Ray-Ban Google Glass, Oakley Google Glass. That's kind of interesting. Glass has Google's doing a deal with Luxottica, which makes all of the, you know, major consumer glasses brands.
I want to talk about the cloud computing stuff a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's interesting.
I actually I got an email from Google a few weeks ago saying that they were doing this Cloud Platform Live event. The event's going to be in San Francisco, but they were going to do satellite viewings, like with streaming video at like Google New York and Google LA, a few other offices, and that they were going to do a live demo on stage showing how to connect an Android app to a cloud service, and that they'd found To-Do Text, and they thought that To-Do Text would be a great candidate to do that. And was it okay with me if they, you know, live coded the cloud plugin for To-Do Text, and you know, would I like to attend the event? And I was like, absolutely. I mean, whatever, the app is open source anyway. They didn't really need to ask my permission. So it was really neat. I went to Google New York yesterday and just kind of watched the live stream. There's quite a few people there. They announced a bunch of really cool features, some of which I like didn't even really get my head around because I'm just not this kind of engineer that does this kind of op stuff. But huge price drops in cloud computing services, virtual machines. And, you know, as it always is at these events, it was the conversation that I had with a Googler kind of in the back in the hallway, you know, for 5 minutes, that was way more informative than the actual presentation. But, you know, the nut of it is that Google, first of all, is obviously taking on AWS, right? They want to take Google's internal operations, like all the systems that they have set up to deploy code and deploy servers, they want to turn that inside out, and they want to offer that to companies, so to startups, and they want everyone to sort of benefit from all the awesome automation that they do. And this series of announcements yesterday, I think, really lays the groundwork for some even bigger kind of cloud platform stuff that we're going to hear about at I/O. Again, this is like super back end, you know, systems kind of stuff, but some really, really neat stuff. And another interesting thing that at the announcement that I found is that they're really embracing GitHub. They've stopped pushing developers toward code.google.com. They said, you know, GitHub is where the code is. GitHub is where the community is. They're doing continuous integration and checkouts and integration with GitHub, doing pull requests and requests. They're hosting a lot of their own open source projects on GitHub, which I was impressed by and surprised by. I really liked that they were saying, you know, we're going to go to where the people are versus ask them to come to us. So anyway, it was a really cool event, and yeah, they forked To-Do Text, and they hooked it up to the Google Cloud. It was kind of fun. I'm still awaiting my pull request. But so,
I would say I want that. Yes.
Yeah, that's nice.
I don't like using Dropbox.
So these price drops are kind of mirror the price drops on the consumer storage that they announced last week on Google Drive, and Google said at this event that. Up to now, pricing on this stuff has not followed Moore's Law, but now it's going to start following Moore's Law, which means dramatic drops, you know, halved every 18 months or something.
Yeah, and they've got AWS in their sights. I mean, the first question that they got was like, hey, are you going to offer tools? You know, the person in the audience stood up and went to the mic and said, are you going to provide tools to move from AWS? And, you know, the Googler on stage said, we will provide tools to switch from other providers. Like, you know, they wouldn't even say Amazon.
Right.
And so whenever a company...
Although Amazon's event is today, I might point out.
Yes.
Well, right? Amazon just announced virtual workspaces, which is really cool.
It's very intrigued.
Deploying a desktop.
Yes.
Yeah, you deploy a full desktop into the cloud. So it's like you can have a Windows desktop running on an Amazon workspace and get to it through your Chromebook.
Chromebook.
I think not on the Chromebook. No. I think really? It's not compatible with the Chromebook, the last thing I read. So
seriously?
No.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure exactly what that all meant. I read a long thread about it and I wasn't clear. But apparently there's an issue with the Chromebook.
They said any device with an internet connection, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
There's an actual technical issue or a political issue?
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to have to. I read this on Google Plus today. The idea is, though, that for instance, a business could have a provisioned workspace that you, as a worker or a student, could do it with a school, could log into on any internet connected device, and there's your apps, including Microsoft Office, for instance, if you wanted or whatever. There's all your data. For a company, it means the data is stored safely in the Google Cloud instead of on some worker's local desktop.
The Amazon Cloud.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the Amazon. Although, I got to say, Google's got managed workspaces or managed virtual machines. I think that probably they can respond by doing something almost identical.
Right. Google's
supporting Windows Server.
So I think Google is not saying run Windows in our cloud at all, whereas Amazon is saying, sure, we can run Windows in our cloud, but we're agnostic about that. So that they may be pushing that difference.
You know, the upshot is we're in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
and it's great for everybody, right? Because prices are going to go down, the tools are going to get better. It's great for everybody.
We want a war.
Yeah, we want a war.
We want a good for consumers. For all of these things, which is good. That's definitely true.
Particularly small businesses.
So this is actually in response to your post, Gina. It would work well with Chrome OS, but doesn't work with it at all. You could use Chrome desktop sharing if you first connected from some other client.
So you could point your Windows machine at it and then Chrome into your Windows machine, which is pointed at the Amazon.
Yeah, I don't know if this guy, Charles, knows what he's talking about or not, but that's not encouraging if that's the case.
Womp.
Yeah, that would be anti-competitive, I would imagine.
No, I suspect it's just that Chrome's not something they bother to install yet because it's not a big install base.
Right. This says works with Windows, Mac, iPad, Kindle Fire, Android tablets.
Kindle Fire.
Of course, you need some sort of a client app. It's not a browser-based.
That's probably what it is.
That's what I was. I assumed it was browser-based.
Yes. So if it's not browser-based, then yeah, then that's a shame. Because then it won't work with a bunch of other things, too.
It's a good deal. For $35 a month, you get a single virtual CPU, 3.75 gigs of memory, 50 gigs of user storage, Internet Explorer 9. Really? Firefox, Adobe Flash, and Adobe Reader. That's the standard bundle. You can get Office Professional for $75 a month.
Wow. Things I never
so
used.
It's basically Windows 7. You're getting Windows 7. Woohoo!
In the meanwhile, cloud. Microsoft is taking the word Windows out of Azure.
Yeah, no, it's just Microsoft Azure. I don't know what that means.
What it means, they're trying to get to pitch the people who want to do Linux hosting there, which they've been able to do for a while. But this is good. The fact that we've got three suppliers that let us run stuff in the cloud and don't require us to use their technology as much as they did is good. Because the Google App Engine was originally, you have to write everything in our own weird ways with our own weird libraries, because then you can use Google stuff and it'll scale for you. Wouldn't that be lovely? And people said, yeah, that's kind of nice, but I don't want to write in that weird way. I'd just rather write the things I know. And what's changed with the Google Cloud Engine stuff is that they're saying, okay, we'll deploy SQL, we'll deploy Cassandra, we'll deploy a bunch of other things. And they did a demo last week of deploying some insane, like a million concurrent clients on a Cassandra instance in Google Cloud, which is pretty impressive. So there's definitely a play there.
There was a little animation on the screen. I'll admit I was multitasking, but there's this animation on the screen. They're like, okay, yeah, we're now inserting 45,000 rows per millisecond into our database, and look, it's going to do a live migration right over. And look, the animation's not even going to stop. And oh my god, look, it didn't. And everybody clapped. And I was sort of like, what? It's like one of these things is just so impossible to demo, you know? But okay, right, live migration happened. Like, I believe you.
Well, it's also like they have to create a million clients as well in order to do this.
Let's deploy a million clients to run.
So we've got a server, and then we've got to deploy another million clients over here to attack our server. It's like, okay, I'm glad you guys are doing that. I don't want to do that. That's good. That the message is we deal with this, and you don't have to. Which is the message I want as a developer.
Right.
Doing that op stuff is really annoying. I've done it. It's not fun at all. And having people specialists do it is a great thing.
Yeah, and this is what this particular product manager was saying to me, was that, at Google, they don't have ops teams. Like, they've automated the crap out of everything, right? And everything just kind of works. Like, they've got teams of fleets of site reliability engineers, SREs, yeah. Right? But this ops stuff they don't do, and nobody wants to do the ops stuff. And nobody should have to do the ops stuff. Like, and because they've optimized the crap out of it and automated it all, they want to offer those services to everyone else so that other startups don't have to have ops folks doing migration. I was just,
awesome.
We just switched to AWS, and I was up all night on Sunday migrating a database with my ops person. Mm. We had to take the site down for 4 hours. I mean, it was in the middle of the night, but that's something that really shouldn't have to happen ever.
So you appreciate this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have somebody who's really good at this kind of thing. I just sort of, ran some scripts and stayed in chat and ate some pizza.
Chinese food.
But,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot you're in Brooklyn. Yeah, pizza.
But it is the worst kind of work. So the more that you can automate it, and the more that Google can kind of open source their processes, it's worth the money. It's worth the investment.
Any other stories before we move on that you guys want to talk about? Jeff, anything on your mind?
Well, I've got two things. Pew mapping Twitter conversations. It's kind of an interesting analysis.
Pew is a nonprofit, does research on how we use the internet.
Great stuff.
They're talking about political stuff?
Just conversations in general. And so they worked with, who was it?
Well, for instance, they say that
Excel. The Social Media Research Foundation, which created Node.xl to collect the data. And so they see various kinds of conversations. They see polarized crowds. We've heard a lot about that.
Where people talking about, he said, she said, you idiot, you moron. Yeah.
And then they map a tight crowd with highly connected, interconnected people. So it's not as if to say that, that you know, there's just one kind of conversation.
Conferences, South by Southwest tweets, right, for instance.
Brand clusters, right? The best dream of every brand there is out there, and community clusters.
I'd like to buy these maps and put them on my wall.
Aren't they pretty?
Yeah.
Then finally, broadcast networks. You know, when important stuff go out in the hub and spoke, and support networks. So that's interesting too. The whole, you know, Comcast, Dell, and so on. Those kinds of conversations, support networks. So I just found they were pretty and interesting to see the different kinds of conversations that do occur on Twitter.
All right. It's going to take a long download, I can tell, to get the interactive version of this.
And I think we should probably mention, I think just for the kind of the record, as far as I'm concerned, I see it as an Edward Snowden victory that on the path to victory that the White House is looking at ending bulk collection of our metadata.
Well, that would be amazing. Well, I will wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at least they're making the right sounds.
Yeah.
Good news for Pebble. I didn't realize this is a success story. Pebble has sold 400,000 watches, and they're on track to double their revenues in 2014.
And when Facebook buys them, then everybody's going to get pissed.
Another Kickstarter project I sank my money into.
Yeah, they're just quietly chipping away at the smartwatch market, despite all the big noise coming out of both Google and Apple lately.
The Pebbles aren't as sexy. They don't do as much, and yet people really love them. You're wearing one, Kevin. I see. Chad's wearing one.
This is a Pebble Steel. They're intentionally kind of minimalist, as opposed to all the kind of things you've been hearing about what might come out of Google and Android is, you know, monitor every aspect of your health and connect everything. And Pebble just wants to be like, hey, you want your text messages? We got those.
Chad, you still enamored of the Pebble?
I'm still in love with the Pebble. Yeah.
Why?
It does basically everything I needed. It allows me to do triage on my digital life as fast as it all comes in. And so instead of pulling out my phone or if I'm in a rush, which happens all the time, where I'm trying to get somewhere or I need to do something, to focus on, instead of pulling out my phone, interrupting my life, I can basically look down on my wrist and see whatever notification or whatever thing sort of popped in. And it's expandable and the battery lasts a really long time. It's really simple. This kind of blew me away. I love that it's not a touch screen. I really like that it has physical buttons because I can check something and then go straight back into doing whatever the heck I was doing before. I don't need to worry about the screen wake time finally turning off so that I don't actually accidentally like add some, you know, do something to it. Or if I'm in bed and I get a message, I can look and then, you know, go back to sleep or whatever. I'm not worried that the touch screen is going to create
that's
some
a sad that wait right there, Chad. That's sad.
Well, that's what you do. I mean, everyone has this story.
I don't pick up the phone when it buzzes.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you don't have to.
I can look and see who it's. Oh, it's mom. And just dismiss.
And
I
don't with know. They just released the 2.0 firmware or the 2.0 app and app store, and they're starting to get a little interactive, just a little bit of back and forth. So I have a watch face or an app on here called Glance, and shows the weather, shows the time, and then when someone texts you, you can actually respond to them with one of your preset responses. So
it has touch?
No,
it's
preset
the button.
Response.
So
you press a button. I get it.
I can set the lower right button to
that
be
seems
like text
so
response.
Primitive. Wow.
You can't see my eyebrows on the audio feed.
Scary high school musical.
As Chad was saying, this is nice. It's nice to not have a touchscreen. It's nice to not get completely out of your zone and have to like type out like, can't talk right now, Gina, explaining Pebble to Leo. I can actually just hit the bottom right button.
And you already have that as a preset?
Well, yeah. And I can tell you how the dog did on his walk. And I can just say 10-4 and all kinds of stuff.
It's real. I have to say, with 400,000 units, that's probably beating anybody else in that space.
Yeah, they're in Best Buy, for God's sakes.
Probably beating the pants off the Galaxy Gear, if I had to guess.
Probably beating the Gear, which in and of itself is awesome for them.
Yeah, good for Pebble. Yeah, good for Maker Studios, the YouTube network which produces PewDiePie. Sold to Disney for $500 million.
For the record, that's not PewDiePie.
That should be PewDiePie, but it's not. It's actually the founder of Maker Studios who had a big payday. This puzzles me a little bit because I would imagine, well, maybe they've got all these guys locked in, but I would imagine that they don't really own any of these shows. But maybe they do. That's probably why Disney bought them. All right, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get our number, our tip. Kevin and Kevin can give us some products or something they're turned on by. So we wrap it up, this week's Twig. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian, the folks who created the world's most powerful and customizable issue and project management system, Jira. JIRA. It easily captures and organizes your workflow so you can prioritize and take action on what's important while staying up to date with the activity going on around you. The hardest thing about talking about Jira is it could do so many things. It's hard to really describe. Believe me, you can use this. It lets you, if you've got a team, a software development team, you can capture, organize, and prioritize all the issues, tasks, features, and bugs. It gives your team a simple, intuitive interface for collaborating with one another in real time. Integrate your documents, your planning documents, your backlog, all a code repository in one platform using REST APIs. Integration with Git so you can follow your code all the way from start to finish through delivery in one single system. Expand infinitely in any direction with thousands of Jira add-ons, including test management, time tracking, project management, hundreds of other uses. If you've got a big project in the works, follow along with 25,000 other companies, 70% of the Fortune 100, and NASA, and get Jira, and avoid the problems of the mythical man month. Stay in the loop with notifications via email, chat, app mentions, or RSS. Monitor streams of activity, self-updating reports and dashboards. Atlassian.com/twig for more information. Atlassian.com/twig. Monthly plans start at $10 a month for up to 10 users, but you could try it free for 30 days when you visit Atlassian.com/twig. Make life easy with Jira. Thank you, Atlassian, for your support of This Week in Google. Now we begin with Gina's tip of the week.
Leo, you don't have your Pixel there, do you?
I don't.
You're not on your Pixel.
We're going to have to make Jeff do this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's not going to quite be the same. This is something that not a lot of people have Chromebooks, but I thought it was really, really interesting. It's especially interesting with the Pixel. But Control-Shift-Refresh on the Chrome OS rotates your browser, so 90 degrees.
I think it did it. It's a square. Yeah. It's a square. Oh no, it's 4-3, isn't it? Or 3-2?
Yeah, so you can kind of hold it like a book and go up and down. I mean, it's totally weird and crazy, and probably not something you could use unless you were, you know, I don't know, drinking your coffee in the morning and browsing the Times or something. But still, kind of cool.
See,
I thought
good would be on the Chrome box. So the Chrome box, you drive a TV screen, which means you can give you a portrait mode screen. That would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we get it back, Gina. Oh, no, now it's upside down.
Oh, it goes all the way around.
Yeah, it keeps going.
That's a very...
If you hooked up a keyboard and mouse to it, I mean, I've seen a lot of developers who like to have their screens in portrait mode, right? Because they get the longer scroll in their code.
How did we not know about this? That's what puzzles me.
They tweeted about it today, and I was like, what? I tried it on my Pixel. I was like, what?
Avid reader, press Control-Shift-Refresh.
So that would be good.
It's particularly good on the Pixel because it's got the touchscreen.
Yeah.
Because typing like that doesn't really work so well. But you do, you know, scrolling works.
And I had one other quick thing
that I'm kind of excited about.
Hold on. Kevin's saying something. I don't know if you can hear him. What did he say, Kevin?
Sorry. I was saying, if you're looking at something inappropriate, you can then use the keyboard as your shield to make sure the person on the train next to you can't see what you're looking at. You
do it. It's upside down.
Right. Just a tip for you commuters.
Okay.
I had that problem lately. I've been watching shows on the PATH train coming back on my Nexus 7. And, you know, just kind of cable shows. But you hit the sex scene. And they're not, you know, not even X-rated, but you kind of feel a little awkward next to you. No, so you switch off. Yeah. I had to do it twice on one train ride the other day.
Banshee, you're totally addicted to girls.
Something else.
So this is where you need the Oculus Rift. You can just sit there on the path.
That's right.
They still can hear you go, whoa! Jeff, did you have a number you'd like to share?
Gina has something else, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I had one.
Oh, this one's good. Yeah.
This is pretty good. So LastPass, which I know, Leo, at least you know and love, and you, Kevin, you too, Kevin, Purdy.
Yeah.
Their auto login to Android apps and on the browser on Android just got way, way better. Like it now, the app, if you're subscribed to Premium, which is like $12 a year, it's literally like $1 a month, completely worth it. It will auto fill your username and password into apps and into your browser on Android in the latest update. You have to enable accessibility so that it can do that screen overlay, and then it can detect, you know, that there's a username and password getting displayed. But this is huge. This is really huge.
This started with 3.2.0. Totally, yeah.
That was the thing that was putting me off using it, because it wouldn't do that.
Well, you just have to open LastPass, copy the password, paste it in.
Yeah, but that's like a...
The other way I used to do it, when I had a lot of, you know, like a new phone and I had a lot of logins to do to install on my apps, is you can use the LastPass keyboard, and then it will do that.
Yeah, the LastPass keyboard to do it. There was a shortcut. You could say, copy my username and password to clipboard, and it would show it in the shade. So that was a little faster, but kind of insecure, because if you left it up there, you know, in your shade, or if you left it on your clipboard, this is way better. Like, this is how LastPass works in the browser.
Right.
And which is the best way. So I'm excited about that. I just wanted to mention that.
It can't happen on iOS because Apple won't give them access.
And it's optional, too. It comes up and it says, fill with LastPass. LastPass can help you fill logins in other Android apps. Would you like to enable this feature? So it's not like LastPass is going to start throwing your password onto the screen every chance it gets.
Very nice.
Ooh. Very
nice. I'm just checking myself. And now it's time for Jeff's number of the week.
Well, so I like this one. In Recode, the Bay Area Council surveyed 500 San Francisco residents, and they found that in this survey, people are just fine with the buses and with Google.
Oh, really?
72% had strong or somewhat favorable reviews of tech workers. 57% had strong or somewhat favorable reviews of employee shuttle buses. And 67% said that allowing them to pick up and drop off at limited number of bus stops is just fine. Thank you very much. Hmm.
Well, we knew that. It was just a small group of people who I make a point. I mean, it's very expensive to buy a house in San Francisco, but it always has been. That's why I live in Petaluma.
Would you prefer Detroit? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Good point. Let's start with Kevin Purdy. You got a pick or something
Or Buffalo, for that matter. Would you rather be in Buffalo?
Not right now.
Oh, boy. Wow. I have to put up with this.
Not right now.
Roll me.
Is it snowing?
No, it's not warm. I will say that. Yeah. There's sun. You can actually see it on my pale face. Earlier you mentioned that Google, or Gina mentioned that in the changelog, that Google now has the visual promotions tab, so that you can see little visual previews of your mail, as you put it, you know, your desired spam mail. And it reminded me that there's a really cool startup that's been doing this kind of like visual inbox thing for a while called Unroll Me. It's unroll.me, and you can go there, and it totally does require, you know, a Gmail permissions, where you give them access to your Gmail inbox. It's going to be a, you know, full stop for some people, but if you are really fed up with all the email you get, you can start using Unroll Me. And one of the things it does is it batches all your email into kind of subscribe, you know, don't want, roll it all up. The roll-up, though, the emails you send to it to batch all into one big email, they arrive as these little thumbnail previews of the top of the email, just like what Google did there. So whenever I see something like that, where a big company takes something that seems like something I've seen before, I always like to just point out that there is a you know, some have trotted that path before. So if you are both inundated with email like we all are, and you're interested in that kind of like quick heads up thumbnail preview of your email, try Unroll Me. It's a really cool service.
Now I have to turn on all mail in my IMAP. That scares me. All right.
Like I said.
Let's try it again. But I do like the idea of getting out of all of these. God, most of my mail now is that stuff.
Is the bacon the spam that you want?
Yeah, spam maybe wanted or at one point signed up for.
Spam they can argue it's okay to send you.
Yeah, yeah. Because Google does a great job stopping the spam. They're just not great at the bacon. Good, I'm running it right now. Thank you for...
I've been using it for a while, and you can see like some of them. It'll show a nice little preview of... What this the
don't unsubscribe to Night Attack.
Well, that's I didn't unsubscribe. I rolled it up, so now it'll come in. And I've been doing it for a little while now.
Okay.
And it is the one of the nicest things is that it will show you all the lists you're subscribed to, and you can have an unsubscribe option.
That's nice.
Which you're just like, oh, I forgot that was 7 years ago.
A lot of this stuff is that
subscribe to that.
I still run a Ruby language mailing list that I really don't need to find the bugs in Ruby anymore. Kevin, you have anything? Kevin Marks, you have anything you want to? Thank you, Kevin Pretty.
I've got a couple of updates on last week's thing. So 2048 has gone on to take over the world and destroy everyone's productivity. But but the fun thing is because it's open source, there are some other silly ones. So there's the number wang version, do you get the reference here?
Okay, number wang.
So play this and see what happens.
Wang computers.
When Kevin Marks says, "Do you get the reference here?"
Almost always, no.
Odds are, no.
There's a British comedy show.
So lost.
So basically, it randomizes.
What is happening?
It's randomizing the numbers.
Oh, this is very frustrating. But it seems to
just the colors.
So you have to do it by color.
Oh, it's by color. Well, I can do that.
Well, except the yellows all look the same. So once you get to the high numbers, you can't play it anymore.
Yeah, because there are some where the numbers are the same for different numbers.
Yes.
Number wanging.
So number wang is a parody of TV game shows done by Mitchell and Webb, where they just, you can look the video up on YouTube, you probably should play it into the show, where they have this incomprehensible TV show where people shout numbers out and they say, that's number wang, give them points. And it's just
made up.
It's just a Dada game show. And so, but very funny.
And so as you play this every once in a while, it shouts, that's number wang.
Yes. So the fun thing to do
I'm
with this
still
is
so lost.
Actually,
pretty good.
This
here.
Is a good one to play on the bus or train when somebody, you know, they say, "What are you playing?" "Oh, I'm playing Number Wang." And they'll, "How do you play?" "Well, can't you tell? It's obvious."
Just watch it. So my son said he was doing this in the break room at school to troll his friends. He was saying, "Just
definitely here. A troll game."
And they were like, "What? Huh?"
I know what I'm doing. Some of the numbers come out backwards. That's what's really fun.
Yes. Yeah, you get backwards numbers, you get square roots. And...
okay.
It's just very silly.
To then even understand this, besides the fact that you have to understand a British game show parody, you'd also have to know about 2048, which we talked about on last week's episode. Yes. So we're going to pause the show now while you go and watch last week's episode and some YouTube number wangs, and we'll be back in an hour.
And then there's... I like to give people something to look up. And then there's the next... 2048 variant, which is the 2048 meta edition.
Ah.
So in this game, you start out with 2048, then it turns to Doctor Who, and then you get the Doge one, and then you keep adding things, and you get...
It's all the other ones.
So the other variants of 2048 appearing as bits of 2048. This is actually almost completely unplayable, because three of them are the same, but...
This is fascinating.
No, but I'm just loving... I haven't seen... an open source game take off in this way before. That's the piece for me that's amusing about this is that everyone's going, oh, I can mix this up with that and mix it up with that. And
is it because it's so easy to write?
It's open source. It's already written. So
right.
People are just forking off the original 2048. But also there are like now 20 versions for Android and for iOS as
right.
well.
People right.
pushing into the app
store. Yeah, there's an infinite app store collection.
And then there's everyone saying, oh, it's just a ripoff of Threes. And it's like... Well, yes, but Space Invaders was a ripoff of Breakout. What's your point? You know, there's the fact that they made it into something different and that is fun. It's interesting to watch. So,
it's only subtly different than the Threes.
But that's the point. But it's a refinement. It's actually more fun to play than threes.
It is more fun, I think. But Lisa, who's a master at threes, won't play it. She says it's ruining. It's like playing badminton if you're a racquetball player. It ruins your.
it probably would ruin your threes game because you just get cross with threes. Like, why are these things pink and blue again?
Right. Right. It seems like the only difference is the way the tiles move, as far as I can tell. And I haven't spent a lot.
So the way the tiles move all in one go here, which is actually nicer than threes, but also the fact that they're powers of two rather than three means that you don't have that awkward one, two, three.
Yeah, it's prettier. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to seed it with ones and twos. Wow.
So then another update on something else I mentioned last week was this Tantex people-focused mobile communication.
Ah, yes.
Which is part of the IndieWeb staff.
Yes.
And he did a post, so I showed you the post of trying to put link icons on your homepage so that people could contact you.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through and worked out what all the URLs are for different ones. So this is quite fun. So basically, you can put these kinds of links on your webpage.
Oh.
And if people click them, it will launch that app and they can have a conversation with you in that particular app. So if you
Is there any browser will understand these?
No, this is particularly focused on mobile. So this is Android and iOS. Some of them will work with other browsers. He documents which ones do and which ones don't. And some of them don't work at all. Apparently, the Gtalk thing has been dropped by Google, which makes it quite hard to do that. But if you do SMS colon email address, both Android and iOS will then open a chat with you using either Hangouts or iMessage, which is interesting.
So would you suggest people make a page on their website with these links for mobile users?
Well, this is what we're experimenting with. The idea is that... You want to have a contact me page, but he's saying, well, we'll make a contact me page that you can actually contact people on.
Right.
Most people on the phone, and they don't want to copy and paste something and do that. How do we do this? And they don't necessarily want to use email. They want to use the chat things that they've got. So how can we make that work?
TANTEK.com. URLs for people-focused mobile communication. I like this idea.
And there's a homebrew website club tonight in San Francisco at Mozilla again, because it's Wednesday.
So... What's the address for that if you want to know more about the homebrew?
IndieWebCamp.com is the best address.
IndieWebCamp.com.
Yes.
And the Homebrew Website Club, which meets every other Wednesday right after work. And I
have one other thing, which I kept till last because it's funny, but it's also on YouTube, so you can edit it out later in case it blows up. I will put the link in the chat.
All right. I'm going to click the link now, and we shall find out more. This is a generic brand. Oh, I've seen this. This is awesome. Let's end the show. Before we do this, I just want to thank you, Kevin Marks, for being here. As always, a great pleasure. He is a man who is changing the world even as he speaks, and we appreciate your time. Kevin,
what about Jeff's number?
Huh? We got a number, didn't we, Jeff?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Never mind.
The few ones.
It wasn't memorable.
Oh, okay.
It was the lead into my Buffalo joke, remember?
That's right.
He didn't mention Habermas or Chipotle, but
wake up here.
It was just that it was eight. It didn't seem like
such a low number.
It seemed like such a low ball. I apologize.
And then Kevin had all the numbers we need for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Lots of numbers there.
Number Wang.
Numbers with Number Wang. We want to thank Kevin Purdy for joining us. CompleteAndroidBook.com, right?
Or actually just thePurdMan.com.
Purdman. Just do the Purdman.
Links just the Purdman, and I'm on Twitter as Kevin Purdy. All one word.
Great to have you. Good luck with the remodel.
Thank you very much.
I hope you have a door.
Floor's looking nice.
Yeah. And your hair looks great. I hope the female programmers just eat you up, eat you alive.
Somewhere in between those two.
Gina Trapani spends her last show in the basement. We're so sad to say goodbye to Mom's basement. I wish you all the best in your move.
Thank you. Thank you. And I actually have a quick announcement. ThinkUp is open to the public. We opened it up this week. ThinkUp.com. You should come join us.
Real quickly.
That's why you were doing ops in the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, now
exactly
we know.
Why we're doing ops in the middle of the night. Exactly. Yes. We're like, RDS.
I'll show you. I'll go to leolaporte.thinkup.com, which is my ThinkUp page. And you can see all of the insights you get at people who followed you. Matthew Ingram can thank me for more people seeing his tweet. 451,398 to be. Oh, that's interesting. So it's the intersection. The shared followers don't count. You actually do an intersection on it. Wow.
We fudged a little. You got a big tweet here. Oh, the petition is to end daylight savings.
That's still a beloved tweet. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to ever get it, but.
Leo, I laughed at the favorite that you had about the bespoke app from
Polizek.
That was a year ago.
Yeah, he was talking. It was a year ago. I think it was Dave Morin who said, "I have two iPhones, each of them with a custom designed, one of a kind bespoke app I had built for my assistant."
Always on offense, never on defense.
It's funny even a year later.
It's fun. That's what's fun about this. Even if you don't, get it, use it for anything else, just going through it is really, really fun. See who follows you. See who adds you to lists. See what your most popular tweets are. How many times you tweeted. Things like that. It's really great stuff. What the best times to tweet are. And enough about me. My tweets contained the word I, me, mine, or myself twice last week. That's six times fewer. I'm getting better thanks to ThinkUp.
Nice job.
Yeah. ThinkUp.com. Join and you'll get these kinds of insights yourself.
Congrats, Gina.
Thank you.
That is wonderful.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
You can also follow Gina on Google Plus and her blog, where she hasn't been posting much lately for obvious reasons, smarterware.org. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of Public Parts and Gutenberg the Geek, all on Audible as well as on Amazon and everywhere else.
These dulcet tones.
So nice to see you all. Thank you for joining us. We do This Week in Google at 1 p.m. Pacific when Leo's not playing around with the internet. 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live if you can every Wednesday, but if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video available after the fact always at twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now let's end with this generic brand video, thanks to Kevin Martz. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
We think first of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. Here's a picture of DNA. There are shitload of people in the world, especially in India. See how we're part of the global economy? Look at those farmers in China. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Also, we care about the environment, loosely. Here's some powerful rushing water and people planting trees. Our policies could be related to these panoramic views of Costa Rica. In today's high-speed environment, stop-motion footage of a city at night with cars turning quickly makes you think about doing things efficiently and time passing. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people. Here's some of them talking and laughing. And close-ups of hands passing canned goods to each other in a setting that evokes community service. Equality, innovation, honesty, and advancement are all words we choose from a list. Our prophets are awe-inspiring, like this guy who's looking up and pointing at a skyscraper or a kite while smiling and explaining something to his child. Using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men, we want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? What about an ethnic old man whose wrinkled smile represents the happiness and wisdom of the poor? Yep.
That's an ad for a stock footage company.
That's
my God, that's awesome.